But we're heading down to San Diego. The mighty 1090. He does the pre and post for the San Diego Padres. Craig Elston. Craig, it's nice to have you with us. You didn't get traded.
I didn't. If your name isn't Abraham Almonte, you didn't either.
God, amazing. Raf and I were talking about it the other day, and Raf says, Justin Upton has got to go. He's got to go. How did that not happen?
Well, I really think, Marty, that we're going to find out more and more over time as to what happened the last 48 to 72 hours with the San Diego Padres. And I have a guess that it's going to be fairly fascinating, because you're talking about a team that, you know, unless you want to go out, which I see several San Diego Padres fans on Twitter doing today, and take the stab of all national baseball writers are idiots, you know, they're like political prognosticators with their finger in the wind, et cetera, et cetera. If you think that they just sit at their laptop like bloggers and don't actually do homework, then you believe that they were just making it all up about the Padres' activity in the market. I choose not to believe that. I believe that these guys do a good job and talk to people in the, you know, talk to actual executives in the business and get their finger on what's happening. And the Padres were active with as many teams in the market as anybody in the week leading up to the deadline. And then in the 2 days before the deadline, I'm sure you saw what I saw too, Marty. You see these tweets come out from the national guys, and they say, what we're hearing is that there could be five trades in an hour with the Padres today. And then in the hours after the deadline, when there's absolute silence, now you're hearing reports from guys like Buster Olney that three different teams yesterday morning were left holding the bag, thinking they had a deal with the Padres, literally unable to get a phone call back. And they all three assumed that, oh, well, the deal must be going on with Team B instead of Team A, Team C instead of Team B. They all assumed that the other guy had the deal worked out. And as it turned out, there were no deals worked out. There was an attempt at a three-teamer apparently yesterday, and that fell through quickly. And the next thing you know, a minute before the deadline, he sneaks in Mark Sepchinski for Abraham Almonte and at least gives the Padres a left-handed one-out reliever, which is something they haven't had the whole year.
Oh, goodness. Oh, interesting. Yeah, you know, when this all started, A.J. Preller, of course, and Don Welke down there had that reputation of that, you know, they'll trade anybody because they did it over the winter and then nothing happened. And then I started reading stories that, well, they're starting to say we're still in this thing now. I've done the whole show today a few hours and stressed to the audience that if a team makes a big move in August and you have a 19-6 August or something like that, you could get back into it if you're a sub-500 team. Do the Padres believe that? Because that's the word from the front office. We're still in this thing.
Okay, so absolutely that's the word from the front office. And I don't think anyone who follows Padres baseball or supports it, I guess I should say, has any choice but to kind of roll with that and say, all right, we're going to try and win this thing. Now, here's the case for, all right? It's one that you might be at least half familiar with. Two-sided coin. A, the Padres are in the midst. This is game two of as easy a 19-game stretch as could possibly be crafted. I mean, I don't think I'm overstating that. This is as easy a stretch as you could possibly find in Major League Baseball. Six consecutive opponents, all of whom have losing records, all of whom traded away major parts of what made their team at least competitive in the past over the course of the last 2 weeks, all lined up one after another. Miami playing with absolutely no passion this weekend. They do see Jose Fernandez on Sunday. Then you go to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's given up Carlos Gomez. Then you come home and you face the Phillies. I know the Phillies have been hot in the second half, but no Hamels. You figure that's going to wear off over time. You're facing a gutted team. Right after that come the Cincinnati Reds. So it's a stretch of games. It ends with the Rockies. It's a stretch of games, 19 games, where the Padres probably have to win 14, 15 of the 19 games. But they could, because they've got their whole team. And the one thing, unequivocally, this group that was put together over the winter, many of whom will go away in the fall, they are now kind of in it to win it. They were told that. It's almost a major league speech. You know, we might as well just go win the thing now. No one's been traded. Many of these guys are going to go away with all their value walking out the door at the end of the year. At the time they made this choice, Fangraphs had them as a 4% chance to make the playoffs. I'm calling them the 4%ers now. They got no choice but to embrace it.
All right. Craig Elston with us. I knew once we'd get John, we'd get the true scoop of what's going on down there. I guess they're left with the hope that maybe something can happen, because they didn't move anybody, and it really was shocking with all the names. And I didn't, you know, to tell you the truth, you know, Cashner, Tyson Ross, Shields had the big contract, and Ian Kennedy, you know, that's still a win. I would say pennant winning, but it's still a positive staff. But why break it up?
Well, here, I'll tell you exactly why. Here is the corner that it appears that A.J. Preller has painted himself into. It is a financial corner. So the Padres' payroll this year is $108 million. And the Pods have already said, ownership has already said, they're willing for that to go up next year, maybe to $120, $125 million. Okay? So that's the money we're playing with. With the current team you have now, Matt Kemp goes from a $3.5 million contract to $18.5 million contract next year and for the 3 years that follow that. James Shields goes from a $10 million contract to a $21 million contract for next year and the 2 years that follow that. Melvin Upton's contract goes up to $16.5 million. Craig Kimbrell's contract goes from $9 to $11 million. Jed Jerko's contract goes from $4 to $6 million. And with just those players alone, Marty, and Alexi Amarista, who's on the books for 1.3 next year, six players already account for $75 million of that Padres payroll. That's standing still. That's without Justin Upton. That's without Joaquin Benoit, who you could bring in for $8.5 million on a club option. That's without a fourth or fifth starter, because Ian Kennedy gone, Brandon Morrow, free agent. That's without your fourth outfielder, because Will Venable's a free agent. He's out the door. And then if you talk about trying to re-sign an Upton at $20 to $25 million, let's just say that Ross and Cashner, who are under club control, they both go up the arbitration ladder. The two of them combine to cost $9.5 million this year. That could be $16 to $18 million next year. And you're right around the $100 million mark, or at least over $90 million, talking about Ross and Cashner, for eight players, wow. 17 left to fill, and less than $30 million. So the reason that you would have moved contracts like Shields or Kimbrell, or the reason you would have moved, if you got the right price, a controllable asset like a Ross or a Cashner, is to get out of that corner financially, because you want to compete next year, and you want to have a little bit of powder left to blow.
All right. Boy, it sounds like the payroll at KMBR that David Feldhaus was just telling me about. $90 million, David. That's the KMBR payroll. I'm kidding, David.
How much of that are you getting, Mark?
No, David Feldhaus gets most of it. I wanted to wake him up there. He's starting to fade out on us. He's been here all day.
Nice.
All right. Well, boy, let me ask you this. Of all the players that were moved, and, you know, Cespedes and David Price and Kazmir and Sven Zobrist and Cueto and all the Latos and all the things, Mike Leake, give me your top player to have an impact on what's coming up here over the next couple of months. What did you like of all the moves? What did you like the best?
I think my favorite move that a team made was Toronto acquiring Troy Tulowitzki. And the reason for that is you've got a team already in a win-now mode, but they had a terrible contract on their books in Jose Reyes, who has stopped playing defense, who has stopped running meaningfully, is prone to massive injuries, 32 years old. You know, not the impact player he used to be, signed for two more years of $44 million. You get out from under that to get Tulowitzki, who admittedly is signed longer, but he's a much better player. I still think Troy Tulowitzki is one of the top 10 players in Major League Baseball, and now he gets an opportunity, as competitive as he is, to stop playing in the doldrums with the Colorado Rockies and to play for kind of a national team in Toronto, being embraced by all of Canada, and play with some damn good hitters in front of him and behind him, you know, talking about, you know, hitting leadoff right now with Donaldson behind him, et cetera. So I think Tulo was a terrific addition. I don't think the Blue Jays gave up an unfair price. And really, they got, to me, into a better situation. So Tulo, for me, the best. And then the other deal I really liked, ironically, also involved Toronto. I thought that the Tigers, on short notice, got a great return for David Price. And they basically picked up 40% of their starting rotation for next year in one move, and probably got another arm for Cespedes 15 minutes before the deadline that'll be there a year later. So for the Tigers, I thought that was probably a really smart read of their situation and a smart move of their assets. And interestingly or ironically, the Padres were in a worse situation with similar assets and did nothing.
Yeah, boy, interesting. Yeah, now Bobby Evans, the GM of the Giants, was telling us the price was one day he's on, next day not, one day on, and the window was very short to make the deal. And that's the way the price negotiations went. All of a sudden, bango, and he was in Toronto. Well, we're going to check with you in a few weeks after this stretch of games and see where you are. Maybe you'll be getting your playoff tickets.
Well, you know, the second side, I told you it was a two-sided coin. The second side of that coin is the difficult August schedule for the San Francisco Giants.
You
guys have a really tough schedule ahead, and the Padres have a patty cake schedule ahead. And, you know, if in theory you can take an eight-game bridge or seven-and-a-half-game bridge and turn it all of a sudden into a game, then, as you know, crazy things can happen. The Padres, in late August of 2010, had a formidable lead on the San Francisco Giants. And they lost 10 in a row from the end of August to early September, and the Giants were able to go ahead and win their first world championship as a result. So things can change. Crazier things have happened. Not much. Not much crazier. It's only happened two or three times in the history of baseball that a team in the Padres situation has made the playoffs. They'd have to go 40-19 from here to get to 90 wins. Almost undoable, you'd think, but who knows?
Yeah, that's why we love it. That's baseball. Craig, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure having you. Thank you. All right, that is Craig Elson, the mighty 1090 on the Padres. Hey, look, you know, this is why we love the game. This is why you love August and September, because that hope is there. Until you're six out with five to go, you always have that hope. And as he says, look at the Giants schedule, look at the Padres schedule, and who knows? Obviously, he does the shows, and they think they're still in it.